Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for October 5th, 2009, and on this week's episode, Tom Williams interviews Paul Kalina from Animal Crackers, now playing at the Goodman Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready and let's talk theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is from the fabulous Goodman production of Animal Crackers. He is a clown director. He's the man who put together a lot of the great comic bits that are and physical bits that are in the show. Welcome, Paul Kalina.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, first of all, tell us about Animal Crackers.
Well, the production is kind of a combination of the script from 1928 that George Kaufman wrote for the Marx Brothers that they performed on Broadway, and then we also pulled some bits from the movie that were not in the stage production, and we also, our jumping off point was an adaptation that the Arena Stage did in the late 70s, early 80s of the production, and they had turned it into more of a traditional musical, as we know musical theater today, that the stories are moved forward by the songs, and that there's a progressional arc to the plot, and we kind of went back to the way the original production was, which was really much more in the style of vaudeville, act to act to act. So you would have a comedy act, and then we'd have a song and dance act, and then you have a song act, and then, you know, so we built it more in that style. So we're a little more true to the form.
Well, which is quite refreshing, because it's really It's a Broadway musical. It's a comedy. It's all of those. Whatever you, if you like any of those or all of those, you're going to be just thrilled as I was.
Truly, and all performed by 9 performers. I mean, back in the day, they had, you know, I believe Henry said they had something like 64 performers in the original Animal Crackers production. So they had choruses of chorus girls, you know, and, mm-hmm. and chorus lines of them, and all these different acts that would just get stuck into Animal Crackers, and you know, we're doing all of that with 9, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing, and besides the quality of the show, I think with 9 actors and with Doug Peck, 6 musicians, this show is very producible around the country. I see it going to Broadway.
Well, that's from your mouth to God's ears, I guess. We'll see.
Yeah, and. Well, I mean, it's great variety and great entertainment, and the cost can't be that high. It's because it's not a 50, you know, person
right.
show.
Well, as far as, you know, Broadway musicals go, yeah, this is a rather small production, and it's pretty set-specific, and so we don't have a million sets coming in and out, and it's really the virtuosity of the performers right there before your eyes, so
yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah, on every level, and I want to get into... what you do with the clowning, but before that, I got to mention what a great musical it is.
Isn't it?
The dance is, you know, I love the old tradition. Give me Gershwin and Cole Porter and all that. That's like Drowsy Chaperone was a new show in the old style.
And
this thing is as a musical, folks, you can't miss it. It's just tremendous.
And it goes even, you know, I would say it's even a period before what Drowsy Chaperone followed. I mean, they're kind of coming out of it into, I would say, what you were saying, the Cole Porter era, where
the
new
30s,
American theater musical was being created, and this is before that even.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it's really a hark back to a style, you know, that is gone away, and maybe we'll be able to revisit a little more.
And then you add all the vaudeville stuff. I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah, well, it's great stuff. Yeah. You know, it's really.
So tell us how you got involved? Because you're the clowning director, and you have a director for the show, and you have a choreographer.
Yeah.
So how do you fit in?
Well, it was kind of new for all of us. You know, Adam Belcour, who's the casting director of Goodman, had wanted to get 500 Clown involved in this in some way. Because he really felt that you're dealing with a family of clowns that, you know, had worked together for decades, you know, really. So that kind of quality, that timing, that understanding of where your partner is going to go, that's not easily, you know, you don't come by that easily. And it takes time. And all the great comic duos and acts, you find that they were together for a long, long time. And were able to play, go off the beaten track, and the other one could follow easily. And so Adam wanted to bring us in, and so Henry and Adam met with 500 Clown. We talked to him for a bit, and he's very interested. Also, you know, our dynamic, our type of work, I mean, you know, the Marx Brothers were chaotic. They brought in chaos.
They brought in anarchy.
Did. And it was dangerous to be in the theater with them. I mean, they were running through the audience. They were doing crazy stuff and stuff that wasn't even scripted. They would just get an impulse and fly with it. And the other ones would follow suit.
And I heard every night it would be different.
Oh, all the time. Because they would do what they wanted to do. And you know, there were stories of them coming late to the theater. Harpo, you know, in Harpo Speaks, talk about, you know, chasing Usherette through the audience to make an entrance because he was late to the theater. And there was no way he was going to get backstage and be able to change, so he just kind of did this quick, you know, run through the audience and through the stage and gone, and Groucho and Chico covered him. And, you know, just all this crazy, great stuff. And so our dynamic is 500 Clown, you know, we really rupture that proscenium wall as well. You know, the audience is part of the show as much as we are. Now, ours have a bit of a more, we're a much more theatrical line or dramatic plot in ours in deconstructionism. However, there is that element, that quality of anarchy. And so when we met with Henry and I just kind of hit it off, and he really felt we needed somebody who was fluent and an expert in clown, had spent his, you know, a great deal of time doing that. And so they asked me to play with that, because also my past is not just 500 Clown. I had done, you know, I had a number of comic duo acts that were much more Marx Brothers-esque, physical acrobatics, like the Bumbleini Brothers, who were much more like two Chico Marxes, you know, bad Italian accents, malapropisms, and a lot of physical comedy, and that's what we did. And it was that also we did acrobatics, you know, I did a whip act. But it was all around comedy. So it was much more of a vaudeville-style act, really. Hmm. And so that sense of timing, that sense of understanding the classical gags, the setup structure and that, was my background as well. And so it just seems that I was pretty suitable for it. And to push the boundaries. I mean, Henry really wanted to make this a dangerous production as well. Really feel the spirit of the Marx Brothers. Not to create a nice museum replica, but to give our cast the liberty and license, once they found it, to live in the spirit of the Marx Brothers and let it be dangerous a bit. And I think they're really finding that. Every night they get more and more comfortable, and so the three Marx Brothers will spin out a little bit or step out of what we've rehearsed, and it's really exciting to see when that happens.
Well, you got to tell us how the casting. I know Molly Brennan, who played Harpo, has been with you for, she's that fabulous, and she's totally fearless.
Yeah, she's, you know, it was interesting. We had a lot of people audition, a lot of really talented people, but just didn't quite have the spirit of Harpo. Just couldn't quite find that, you know, that essential ingredient, the weight of a pathos, as well as the aggressive side of him as well. And so, you know, we were finding somebody would have one or the other, but not both. And we were actually all invited to audition for the show. It wasn't looking like it was going to work out, and Molly wasn't so sure she really wanted to work on the production. And we were doing an industrial at the time, and she started playing on stage in between our sets. And she was just doing this awesome work, and I just went, Molly, you have to audition for the show. You really do. You just have it. And so she decided to audition, and hands down, she walked in, and I turned to Henry, the director, and I said, there's our Harpo. He's like, yeah. It was obvious. I mean, she was just fantastic.
Yeah, she was.
And so, you know, and we auditioned in New York after having Molly. You know, we were like, well, we're going to keep our options open just in case. And there were a lot of really talented people coming in, but nobody really could bring what Molly brought to it. So.
Well, it's a career maker for her, I think, a breakthrough.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, yeah. Really, really phenomenal.
So, how did you come up with Joey Stalnick and Groucho?
Well, you know, Adam had called Joey in or set up. I think he wanted to see Joey in New York, so Joey was coming in from New York, and Jay Binder, who was a casting director in New York, brought in a bunch of people, and we had some really talented people here audition for Groucho and Chico, but nobody again. There's a quality to them, and we just couldn't quite find someone there. And Joey just came in and knocked the pants off and just was playing, and just in the spirit of it, and had that danger and that edge that Groucho has, that bit of, there's a bit of an anger to Groucho. You
yeah.
know, and Joey could really tie into that, and it was fantastic. And yet that charmingness, that charming, sweet side of him.
And his timing, especially the sides of the audience. I mean, oh.
Yeah, yeah. And Jonathan came in, and it was hands down again. Again, some great people came in, but Jonathan came in, knocked our pants off, and we're just like, yep, there it is. You know, you just know.
Yeah.
You know, we went through a lot of people.
Well, it didn't hurt that he can play the piano.
Well, we were, you know.
That had to
that
be
was
hard,
a prerequisite.
Right? Yeah.
That was just a total prerequisite. And he came in and just nailed the piano and just played and had the spirit of him. And I was like, ah. You know, we just knew.
Okay. So now you've got your three main comics.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to get people like Ora Jones, who I think is unbelievable.
Yeah.
She's such a major
Isn't
talent.
She phenomenal?
Oh, she's just...
And it's just great to see Ora in this kind of a role.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that people would not expect to see Ora in.
Well, we know her as this great classical actress,
yep.
You know, and having this big stage presence. But for her to come and sing and dance.
Yeah.
She was right in there on those...
voice and she's a good dancer, too, yeah.
Yeah, she did a great job. But
and do an incredible stairfall.
Yeah, you know, I got to ask you about that. I heard, is it true? I heard that was kind of her idea.
It was totally her idea.
Because how does she do that without getting all bruised
well,
up?
Well, we then worked on it a lot to make sure that it was safe and a good technique.
So that's where you come in, right, with
yeah,
the expertise.
I mean, Henry and I wanted her to slide down the slide that's along the side of the staircase. She's like, I want to fall down the stairs. I used to do that all the time with my sister. And so I was like, well, you know, let's see. But, you know, it's 8 shows a week, and,
yeah.
You know, you're not used to doing this stuff, And then we did a run-through, and she just threw herself down the stairs. I was laughing hysterically. I stood up and applauded her. I said, you're my new hero.
Wow.
And I said, all right, let's figure out how to make it. And so we worked a long time to make it safe and find a technique that she could do, because those are not easy stairs to come down because they're curved.
Yeah.
So it really takes, you know. So
your angles, yeah, you have to time it so you don't hit the edges, right?
Exactly, and bang your shins up or hit your head on the railing. Like, it really takes a good technique, and she worked really hard at it with me, and she's just great. She's just wonderful.
So tell us about the rehearsal process, how long, and so for some of the bits, because... You know, there's just so much, and I got to have you, without giving away, talk about the card game.
Well, the card game,
amazing.
You know, it's a classic.
Yeah.
You know, we were definitely there. You know, a lot of the bits, you know, some stuff we added that's our own, or we had an idea, or we explored it. The picture stuff is our own. You know, it's because of the requirements of the set, man. But the card game's classic. It's iconic, and so we worked a long time. It's not easy. They worked and drilled that and drilled that and drilled that to get the timing right, to get the energy right, sort of what the Harpo and Chico are doing. And so we rehearsed that a lot and took a long time. It was slow going. And then, you know, these guys are just so masterful, and they were just really starting to find the, you know, there are some tricks in that.
Yeah.
And I won't give it away.
No, don't give it away. It's amazing. No, it really
people
is.
Are blown away.
Yep.
And I said, you know, Henry and I, you know, there was a talk by the scenic department that they wanted to mask some things. And I was like, nope, it's got to be done right in front of everybody's eyes. So when it happens, they go, what?
Yeah. And you know, folks, just tell you this. that, you know, I've seen a lot of shows, and I got a pretty good eye for the stage. I see detail, and so do a lot of the other reviewers. And we were all saying after the show, how did they do that?
Yeah.
Folks, it just shows how great the craft is in this show.
Yeah.
And what about the word? How much do you get involved with the, I know the wording, like Chico and Groucho have a combination of wordplay and physicality in some of the bits.
Yeah, well, you know, we all work together, Henry and John and I and Doug, all four of us really work together going back and forth.
That's true. Doug has to time his music for certain.
Oh, a lot of it. And then we'd have ideas, and I'd say, you know, can we cut this or make this? You know, this will play better comically if this happens here, and da-da-da. And then they would have an idea about, hey, Paul, seems like we need this here. I'm like, great. So we were in and out of each other's work all the time. It's a very... as well as the actors, you know, bringing, you know, like, for instance, Aura, you know, having her, bringing her, saying, I want to do this. Great, let's figure out how to do it, you know. I don't think there's anything in that piece, in this whole production, that is solely one person's idea. I mean, there may be an aspect, an element of it, a moment, but as a whole, it was everybody's collaboration.
Which made
it really fun.
I guess there was no egos because if there was infighting, this could never have come off the way it did. I mean,
no, there's a lot of hard work, and it was, you know, the goal was to have fun, which we had a lot of fun, and it was to, you know, the project, you know, it was the show, you know, and it was a monster, you know. There was a lot more to the show when we began previews. It was 3 hours long, and we cut a lot out of it, you know.
Well, see, I'm old fashioned. You could have kept me 5 hours.
Well, what was pretty amazing about these performers is they did the 3 hour previews, and by the end, right before we cut, we did, I believe, three previews or four previews before we made cuts, because we wanted to see what's working, what's running, mm-hmm. let the actors really get a feel for it. And by the last two previews, they were able to drive that 3 hours and hold everybody's attention.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of, you know, they came off there exhausted. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Well, we came, let's see, opening night, I believe it was about 225, 220, something like
somewhere
that.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
And it flowed. I mean, it just, and the audience reaction, from what I understand, every night has been extremely positive.
People are loving it. It's great watching the older folks. You know, like my father had seen the Marx Brothers at the Chicago when they were traveling with one of their movies, and they did an hour-and-a-half stage show.
I did, too. I was 12 years old, but I saw that, and nobody believed that until, you know, with YouTube and all of, you know, stuff on the Internet, it can be documented.
Yeah. No, my dad was like...
And they were wild.
They were crazy, and he loved it. You know, it was great. You know, and we were walking past the Chicago, and it was great to see his eyes because it just, the memory came back. He goes, well, that's where I saw them.
Yeah, that's where they were. That's right.
That's where they were. So it was really, really great.
Well, let me ask you this. For the younger generation, and I know you're a professor at the University of Iowa, correct?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how many of the college age and, say, kids in the 20s don't know the Marx Brothers?
It's true. I mean, you know, unfortunately for our generations, you know, I guess it's like any, you know, I mean, you could even say that to Groucho, you know, he had no use for Buster Keaton, and Buster Keaton was a bit writer for them.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Buster Keaton was a bit writer for them for a while, and Keaton really was frustrated with them because they just didn't have a discipline in the way that he was used to, and they were just kind of all over the place and doing their own thing, and Groucho had no use for Keaton. But it was, you know, it is sad. You know, we're becoming less and less of an oral society and much more of a physical, you know, instant gratification, which is not bad because in some ways what's coming back is this new appreciation for the old silent comics, the Chaplin, the Keatons, because we have, you know, physical gags. But the dexterity with which Groucho and Chico were with language, you know, their ability to field an improv and weave it in. You know,
how much of that was written for him? Or I understand that the book of this of Animal Crackers influenced Groucho a lot in their style. Is that true, or did they bring that into it?
You know, I think it did. I think Kaufman had a huge influence on their on their verbal repartee. You know, he wrote a number of shows for them in their movies, so I think he really helped them develop their characters and their work and their style. But they were also, you know, wordplay artists. I mean, they loved language that way, and it was a way that Groucho could really, you know, take somebody down, that he really was.
Well, how about the TV show? I grew up watching Groucho on his TV show.
Right.
And he would just take these people from the cornfield or wherever and just rip them apart, and they wouldn't even know it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'd all be laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was just quick, and you know, you know, Harpo was not that way. Harpo was a very physical kid. He, you know, he got thrown literally out of the second story window of his schoolhouse, you know, on, I think, the third or fourth time that happened. It was like in third grade or something. He said, "That's it. I'm not going back." He didn't go back to school again and started learning on the streets and, you know, just learning from different people. But he stopped being vocal because Chico and Groucho had such an amazing command of the language and wordplay, and he couldn't keep up with them, that I can't remember what it was. So he just went silent once, and it was like played like gangbusters.
And it weighed, yeah.
Well, and because he was a really physical person. I mean, he'd do a lot of physical stunts and that.
I understand the mother, Minnie, managed them too, right?
Yeah, a long time, yeah. She was, she really got them into the show business, and, you know, they spent 10 years in Chicago really developing their career.
Oh, I didn't know that. On the vaudeville stages here?
They moved to Chicago to be able to play the smaller circuit stages and really hone their craft in that. And then from here, they got picked up and got on, put on the circuit, eventually the Orpheum circuit, which is was the big circuit.
Yeah, that was the big.
And ended up at the Palace finally in New York. So,
wow.
Which is the line for, you know, Groucho saying, "Is this the Palace? I always wanted to play the Palace."
Yeah. Oh, he uses that all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm recommending in my review that for some of the younger people, go to Netflix or YouTube and watch Animal Crackers, because once they see that, they'll get a little glimpse of the style, and then they'll get blown away when they see it live.
Yeah, well, because there's so much in the movie that is not in the film, you know, or there's so much in the stage production that's not in the film, you know. The ending of Animal Crackers is the way our production ends, is the way it ends in Kaufman's script.
Okay.
It's just an absurd left turn.
Yes.
And it is the era, you know, people are constantly like, oh, you know, you hear people go, "Well, it doesn't make sense," or, "Well, how'd you go here?" And I said, well, if you understand the comedy of the time, also in the fact that, you know, at that time, artists were starting to get into expressionism and things like that, you know.
Yeah, Eugene O'Neill was
Eugene O'Neill
was
going off on his thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Dolly was painting, starting to go off on his, you know, exploration. You know, people were starting to explore different styles. And clown has always taken a left turn. Clown always kind of goes this way. And you think you're going this way, and then all of a sudden it goes way over here, and you go, what? And you just got to go with it.
Yeah.
And in the true Marx Brothers fashion, it's like, of course they go here, you know, and just enjoy the ride. And then at the end, all worlds are mixed up together, and it just resolves. It's like, yep, here we go, that's it.
And for folks who, you know, don't go to a lot of theater, to appreciate the craft that they see on stage, it was flawless.
I think that's a big thing. You know, as I read some of the reviews and that, what disappoints me is that there is a lack, even by some of the reviewers, of an understanding of the technique to execute this comedy flawlessly, with lack of effort.
It seems like they've been playing it for years.
Yeah, exactly.
And how long was your total rehearsal? Probably
five weeks, and that means they had to learn
weeks.
Song, dance,
wow,
comic routines, work in those styles, you know, multiple characters. There was a lot of work, and we threw a lot out. So, you know, what you see, there was also another half an hour's worth of material that we were rehearsing that ended up thrown out. So there was just a ton of work, and everybody was called every day for the whole day. You know, nobody got a day off of rehearsal or a half a day of rehearsal. Those nine worked every day, all day. We had two rehearsal rooms going, plus we were working in the lobby. I mean, that's how much we had to to work to get it happening.
So you have to appreciate that, and you have to appreciate the work ethic.
Absolutely. And the Goodman Theater was out of this world. I mean, I walked into pre-production and said, I have to have all these props. I have to have all of these things that we are going to work with, because it is imperative that Molly especially Molly, but for those that work with the other bits, we have to have what we are using, the props, the chairs, the tables, everything. And we walked in on the first day of rehearsal, and there it all was. It was amazing.
Yeah, well, they have their act together.
They very much do.
I just want to mention before we finish this, the work of Stanley Mathis.
Isn't he something?
God, he is good. I mean, to switch characters and be so strong in both of them.
Oh, just and just smooth. I mean,
and he sings and dances, too.
Oh, he's an old song and dance guy. Yeah. He's just fantastic. And everybody, I mean, you know,
Jesse
Tony
Mueller
and Mara and Jesse Mueller and Ed. I mean, they're just the whole cast. I mean, Henry did an impeccable job of casting this and really had a plan of how he wanted this cast to be arranged. You know, and it truly was arranged the way they set up vaudeville in some ways. You know, you had your music act, you had your animal act, you had your comic act,
yeah.
You know, you had your
variety
act.
Glad you pointed that out, because I should have said that in my review and I didn't, that you're right. Besides as a regular musical, it is like the circuit on a vaudeville show.
Totally. I mean, that's how these were built. I mean, you have your comic routines,
right.
You have your song and dance routines, you have your song routines, you have the specialty with the orchestra, you know. It's not as broad as the vaudeville. There were other acts that went into, you know, there were animal acts and that went into it. But as a whole, it's built that way.
Yeah.
And
but it all worked. You tied it all together.
Absolutely. And Henry really was smart and went into it saying, you know, we need two really amazing singers that are ingenues, that are just bringing that really beautiful, humble spirit.
Yeah, and they
and
did.
And then we need these knockout song and dance hoofers. And, you know, Tony and Mara just blow it out.
Oh.
We need these tight Marx Brothers, boom. We need somebody who's a great actress who can really play against the Marx Brothers and be the straight man. Or, boom, hands down, there she is. You know, we really wanted somebody who could play Hives and Hines at the same time, Chandler, flip-flop between them and really bring in a new spirit and a different style of song and dance that we have. Boom, there we go. Stanley comes in. I mean, it was just fantastic.
This is one of the most ambitious shows and one of the best things that Goodman has done in years. And I said it's one of the best shows, probably the best show of 2009 in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's – and I've seen everything. I go every night, you know. And I was never just so – I was sitting with my mouth open the whole show. Sometimes I didn't laugh because it just was so overwhelming. It was funny. But by the time I'm laughing, you're on two other bits.
Right. Well, and that's classic Marx Brothers. You know what I mean? If you watch the movies, you don't laugh hard riot all the time. Nothing, sometimes, and we developed this language between ourselves. You know, Joey would maybe come back and go, this isn't playing. I said, it's playing just fine. It's not a meal. It's a snack.
Yeah.
Or it's an hors d'oeuvre. Or, you know, we started using it in food terms. You know, I'm like, it's just a crumb. It's a flavoring. It's you're just basically stirring up inside of us the ability to laugh, but you're not getting us to a full laughter. It's just a little enjoyment.
But and each time you see it, I've talked to some people who've seen it more than once. You know, some of the production, some of the press people with the Goodman, and they said they're dying laughing in different places.
Absolutely,
because you might have missed one little thing, or you're dwelling on it, missed the next one. But that just shows what a great show it is. You got to be proud of this.
Oh, I'm extremely proud of it, and it was an honor, and it was just a real blessing and joy to work with all of the people. Not just the cast, but, you know, our stage management, you know, Joe and Alden and the Goodman are out of this world.
Oh, they got to be working their rear end off. What a tough show to be a stage manager.
But all the interns and everybody, you know, all of, you know, the props people, Alice and the scene people and just the entire production staff is out of this world. Everything they could do for us to help us all make this thing happen. And it was just a real joy. It was a lot of work, and it wasn't always easy, but it was really...
Well, congratulations on a major production, and I think this show will go on. Let's talk a little bit about some of your background. I remember the Romance Cycle at Court Theater, and you were involved with that.
Long time ago, yeah. Adrian, my partner Adrian and I did a little bit of the physical work for that. We did some of the physical choreography. And
well, that was amazing, because the folks, they spread out the entire... every inch of the court stage was used in this, and these people were, the movement was amazing. So you were involved with that, huh?
Yeah, a bit. You know, Adrian and I kind of consulted and worked with them on some things and helped build the ensemble with Charlie and that, and then Charlie took and explored his things, and we just kind of did a lot of different aspects of the show that Charlie wanted us to help them build and design.
So tell us what's going on now with 500 Clowns.
Well, you know, we had our new show this summer, which was great and really expanded our ranks and expanded our, you know, we constantly try to push ourselves into new realms, new areas, new ways of expanding our work. So we're looking to hopefully bring Elephant Deal back again and take it back into the rehearsal rooms and change what we learned about the show and make it tighter and better. We're also looking to develop a family show this summer with the company, which will be new endeavor. And we're actually looking to wear nose. We're going to, you know, go into August, which is the red nose clown. Not so much makeup, but just really our red noses.
Is that a commedia dell'arte sort of thing?
It's actually a form of clown. You know, the August grew out of England. There was a, you know, in Europe you traditionally had the white clown, which was very ornate costumes, sort of the cone hat, sort of grew out of the Pierrot, you know, white face, and then they'd have certain details painted on the face. But yeah, the white clown, and then the August kind of grew out of one of the clowns seeing these basically the town thugs that they would hire to guard the ring, so nobody would rush the ring and nobody could attack. And so these guys, you know, it was cold, and a lot of times they were drinking, and they got red noses. And so one of the clowns decided to create a clown like that and began wearing the red nose, and the August was born.
Terrific! You know, we need more clown shows.
I agree.
We
You know, but I think it's coming more and more. David Shiner is bringing his vaudeville show that he built with Cirque du Soleil to the Chicago.
Yes, I can't wait to see that. It's coming up,
So, you know, there's somebody who, you know, David Shiner, Bill Irwin, those guys really pioneered the new vaudeville and really brought European style clowning or clowning. Clowning in the tradition, I would say, of great pathos, heart. And in the style, maybe, you know, if you go with the American style of clown, which, or I'd say more of the circus clown style, you know, the Emmett Kelly and that, you know, that's Bill Irwin's background, and David Shiner comes from a more European style background.
Okay.
And it's just really bringing that work back. And I agree. I think, you know.
I'm blanking on his name. Who was the sad clown was always on Ed Sullivan? Everett or something? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Everett, right.
Yeah, you know, he was always the sad clown that sort of made everyone cry. Talk about pathos.
Yeah.
And I'm blanking on his name.
It wasn't Emmett Kelly, was it?
Yeah, Emmett Kelly. It was
Emmett Kelly.
Yeah,
okay.
Emmett Kelly, thank you.
I mean, Emmett Kelly had the great, you know, the great, you know, routine of sweeping up the spotlight.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of his stuff. Emmett Kelly had great pathos in his work. And I think that's the beauty of it. You laugh. And you cry. You know, I mean, the clown is just really showing an expansion of the human spirit and the human struggle.
Yes,
you know?
You're to be commended on it. Yes, and it doesn't need all the noise, all the, you know, the words. I mean, I love lyrics and things, but in dialogue, but there's a lot of ways of telling a story.
Yeah.
And you are teaching the young students the clown techniques?
I'm teaching physical theater, you know, a lot of different styles. Clown will be one of those semesters we will work on clown. But I'm working in foundation work. And in my background, you know, I studied at Dell'Arte, which was a physical theater school, and I actually just stumbled on clown. I really didn't even want to study clown. And ended up falling in love with it when I studied it there and it basically dedicated my life to it at this point.
Right.
But I study many other forms of mask and commedia and other physical theater.
Good. Got to bring this back because it's just one of the things that shows the magic of the live stage that cannot be done on television or film.
I agree.
Not the same way.
No, I agree.
Well, thank you so much. This has been terrific. Folks, make sure you get to see Animal Crackers. And, Paul, thank you for a great interview.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Folks, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of October 5th, 2009. A special Jeff Award will be presented to director-producer William Polinsky at the Jeff Award ceremony on October 19th in recognition of his 50 years in theater. The Second City will also receive a tribute award in honor of their 50th anniversary. Polinsky was the founder and artistic director of Candlelight Playhouse, America's first dinner theater, which opened in Washington, D.C. in 1959 and then in Summit, Illinois in 1961. Polinsky is widely recognized for his work as a director of the American musical and has produced more than 400 shows in his career. He has served as the artistic director at the Theater at the Center since 2005. The 41st Annual Jeff Award Ceremony will be held on Monday, October 19th at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. Tickets can be purchased at the Jeff Awards website, which is www.jeffawards.org. The Jeff Awards have been honoring outstanding theater artists every year since 1968, and the next non-equity award ceremony will be held at the Park West on June 7th of 2010. Check out the article about William Polinsky's extraordinary career on our website, theaterinchicago.com's Theater News section. Following the recent closure of Appletree Theater and their educational programs, some other companies are stepping up to fill in the gaps. The Improv Playhouse from Highland Park will be taking over the Eileen Bevers Traveling Troupe, which was a teen ensemble at Appletree. The Improv Playhouse has taken on several of the teaching staff and will offer some of the students credits towards their programs. The new group will be called the North Shore Traveling Troupe and will keep the performance schedule at the Museum of Science and Industry and the Botanical Gardens for the holidays. We are still waiting for another company to take hold of Appletree's main theater company, but for now, the good news is that part of the educational programs will continue. Benno Nelson brings us another article in his Full Storefrontal series. This edition focuses on Caffeine Theater with an interview with the artistic director Jennifer Shook and how the company produces work that makes audiences think. Be sure to check out the interview on Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the Theater News from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Paul Kalina for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.